run short for a quorum, I think we better give a complete room full of witnesses. We should wait any longer, maybe we'll have somebody here by the time we need them. First bill on the calendar is Hospital 807, front sponsor, Mr. Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Hugh Malone, representative from House District 13. I think the members will find two versions of House Bill 807 in their files. The original bill calls for an act relating to a fee punch card system for king salmon sport fishing, and the committee substitute reported out by the House Resources Committee is no longer an authorization bill, it's an appropriations bill in the amount of $200,000 for the management of the Cook Inlet King Salmon Sport Fishery. You go back just briefly on this, Mr. Chairman. The request for a bill that would allow the Board of Fisheries to establish a fee punch card or stamp system for the management of the King Salmon Fishery, particularly the King Salmon Fishery in Cook Inlet, came from the Board of Fisheries, specifically through a member of that board, Dr. Calvin Fair from Soldotna. And on that request, I had this legislation introduced, House Bill 807. The committee put quite a bit of work into a proposed committee substitute for a fee stamp system for the King Salmon Fishery. Basically, unless the legislature gives the board the authority to do that, they don't have authority to charge for any punch card or stamp system that they might set up. So what we had at one time, we had a draft committee substitute in resources that would have provided for a fee for a stamp system for the King Salmon Fishery. And the reason, the whole purpose behind this was to provide additional money for the funding of the management of the King Salmon Sports Fishery at the present time in Cook Inlet. Perhaps the idea would have been expanded to include other areas in the state. But after considerable amount of discussion on the question and testimony by members of sports fisheries organizations in Alaska that they weren't sure that they wanted to see an assessment system set up for the management of what is essentially a sports fishery, the committee elected to take another approach and provide general fund appropriations for the purposes of the management of Cook Inlet King Salmon Sport Fishery, rather than assessing the users of that fishery through a fee punch card or stamp system. Basic argument resources was, well, we're putting millions upon millions of dollars into the fishery to develop it as a commercial resource. It's only fair to put a little bit of money into the fishery to develop it as a recreational resource. So finally, the committee came to the conclusion, Resources Committee, that maybe an appropriation was a better way of handling this and raising the money through a fee, stamp, or punch card system, and having the money go into the fishing game fund and then reappropriated on that basis. Probably the members, I don't know if they have in their file or not, sure they'll hear from the department directly on this, but is the basic argument for the establishment of additional funding, whether it's through the fee stamp system or punch card system or direct appropriation, is in the Cook Inlet area has been the growth of the sports fishery. In the past, there has been a punch card monitoring system, but it's not without a fee system. It's not raising any additional funds. In fact, all it's doing is costing extra money to operate that. I read from part of a paper that the department prepared, which related to the amount of revenues that would have been raised under some original form of the bill. It states as follows: the punch card fisheries remain relatively small over the years. Recent rapid growth in Cook Inlet area in numbers of anglers has placed a budgetary impact on the limited resources available to the Sport Fish Division. In the past, a small punch card fishery was absorbed into the existing program with only minor impact. Current demands plus the expansion contemplated will seriously impact all programs at Cook Inlet to the eventual exclusion of all but the Punch Card King Salmon effort. Additional revenue sources will permit continuation of critical programs. Word I can't read. On other species and problems while providing the necessary funds to adequately conduct a sound King Salmon Punch Card effort. They're concerned just with the monitoring and catch through the punch card system, but concerned with the overall management of the King Salmon fishery in Cook Inlet. The reason why the Resources Committee came out with the number $200,000 in the committee substitute was the we're estimating that something on that order would be raised by a fee stamper punch card system. So the two alternatives would be this fee stamp system, which would in effect be a levy on the users, or direct appropriation of the general fund, and boil down to the fact that the Resources Committee decided that if we're putting as much money as we have been putting into the commercial fisheries, that we ought to begin to make a substantial contribution to the recreational fisheries, sport fishery. That's about all I can say about the legislation, except that if the Finance Committee finally elects that the original idea of a fee stamp system is a better approach, there is a draft committee substitute that Resources is working on that would do the job. The original bill would not in the form that it was introduced. But I would recommend to the committee that we go ahead and use general fund monies for the support of the Cook Inlet King Salmon Sport Fishery Management, and not depend exclusively on fish and game funds. So I'll try to answer any questions people have.
Questions from the committee?
I got it.
Mr. Hogan,
how much do we get out of sport licenses now? What revenue figure?
I got that information here.
I don't have my book with me.
I think probably the department can speak to that. I don't have the income here from the sale of licenses. It was submitted to the committee, however, it was considered.
Do they have a sports commercial license up there, too?
Not that I know of.
Well, I'm just keeping them on it.
Okay.
$4 million.
It says here, the fish and game funds, sport fish budget and funding sources for fiscal year 77-78, the number of licenses I don't see, but 1,040,000 was raised in fiscal year 77, and estimating 1.8 million in fiscal year 78 from fish and game funds. That's exclusive federal receipts from the sale of licenses, I believe. Yeah, I don't have the numbers of licenses those represent. Right now, the basic concern is the sports fisheries, the freshwater sports fisheries in Cook Inlet, King Salmon. Later on, of course, other fisheries, other sports fisheries, depending on the amount of pressure that's being put on them, will probably require attention as well.
Further questions from the committee? Mr. Malone, do you have any objection to committee substitute for House Bill 807 as it's before us? It was my understanding that was your preference to the original bill, is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's correct. It is my preference to the original bill. First, the original bill, the form that was introduced, has some technical problems with it. We did work up a proposed committee substitute and resources that would have worked. But then after considerable amount of debate and a fair amount of testimony on the question of resources, I think the consensus of the committee, and with which I agree, was that it was probably fair to raise the necessary funds from the state general fund than from a so-called user fee. And as people here know, we've tried in the past by raising fish and game licenses to keep the at least the same proportion of the fish and game management funds coming in from the sale of those licenses. But unless we raise them again, we're not going to be able to do that. And I think they're up high enough right now. I think there's a pretty good argument not to increase the levy, at least in the foreseeable future, on the licenses or fee punch card or stamp system, because I think that we've already raised them once, and I think they're fairly high levels right now.
Further questions, Mr. Malone? Not, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Anyone else in the audience wish to testify on this? If so, would you take a seat down there and identify yourself for the record, please?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Ed Heiser, the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Fish and Game. On my right is Lou Bandarola, Deputy Director of the Sport Fish Division. Lou Bandarola can speak in detail on the bill before you. I would just like to reemphasize the problem that Representative Malone has just finished discussing. It's the reliance of the sport fishing and hunting programs on license revenue, fish and game fund, and the matching DJ and PR funds, federal funds. This has created a number of problems over the years. It's created an artificial ceiling on our recreational fishing and hunting programs. It has caused funding shortfalls because the license fee remained static for a good many years. And the recent fee increase took care of the problem for a while, but again, we're caught up in the inflationary spiral. It's more and more expensive to do business, and the revenue from the sale of licenses is a constraint on these recreational fishing and hunting programs. We have tried for a number of years to break the barrier of general fund funding for these programs. I think it's ultimately going to come. There are a number of problems associated with total reliance on the license sales, total reliance of particular user groups, and the bias in the department's program. We can get into that in detail if you wish, but Lou does have some, he has information on the sale of licenses, which Representative Haugen asked.
Questions from the committee? Mr. Rosen?
I just wonder, what kind of a program would you have other than the program you have now for managing fisheries and cooking? Is anything added to it or different from it, or is it just continuation of the same program?
Well, I believe that the sport fish people had an expanded program in mind. I think we've got a role to answer that question.
Mr. Chairman, initially the additional revenue would provide more detailed information to be acquired on the various fisheries that are presently taking place in the Cook Inlet area. There are a couple of new systems that need looking into. Most of the problem revolves around the need for stock status data. More specifically, which stocks are being taken in which areas, and how many fish are now being harvested from the known stocks that presently utilize the Lower Kenai Peninsula as an example. All of the programs that we're discussing and intending to implement with the additional funding would revolve around those particular areas. It would be supplemental to the programs we're doing now, which are very marginal as far as the activity and the effort that we can place on those activities now.
Further questions? Mr. Hoggett?
I see your budget here is $3.9 million for this year. Is that right? The governor's budget.
Correct.
This is this $200,000 would be in addition to that.
Yes, it would.
So my only concern is that when you're talking about king salmon, I just think about it now. You all realize we've got a terrible problem out there, and it seems to me it ought to be a joint effort between commercial fish and sport fish, you know? I can see just no end of problems with what I've been reading in the paper, and it sounds just like Puget Sound did 35 years ago, 40 years ago. And apparently they finally got to working together on it and tried to resolve it. I think that we ought to be thinking about something like that. Try to get these two parties together. They're going to get nowhere fighting each other. I mean, I'm a commercial fisherman, but I still believe that, you know, they've got a right to a piece of the action, too. And it can't be, if it's weak in all places, everybody gets hurt. And if they were working together to make it better, or try to control the exploitation on a resource. I know we talked about that 3-4 years ago. I thought we had something going like that, but it don't look like that anymore.
Mr. Chairman, this is a rather unique problem because for a number of years the fishery has been completely closed. We're talking now about the early run of kings going to the Susitna River. And the Board of Fisheries closed this fishery in the 60s because of overfishing. And there has been very little usage of that particular segment of the run since that time. Sport Fish Division and Commercial Fish Division people have been working together on a limited basis in looking into the status of the King Salmon Run to the Susitna. But since there have been such heavily utilized fisheries, both commercial and sport, in the Cook Inlet area, that's been where the action is, and that's been getting the major part of the attention. Clearly, we need to do more with regard to the king salmon of the upper Cook Inlet area.
Further questions? Mr. Rowe,
I was curious to Ernie's question. How much money did they take in for sport fishing in the district? Did you say that in the district?
How much money from that particular district?
Yeah, from the sale of licenses.
About 35 to 45% of the effort is conducted in the upper Cook Inlet area. We don't have breakouts specifically of the number of licenses sold in each particular area, basically because the licenses are not broken out in that manner.
What's the total figure?
77 closed out at about 1,900,000 in license revenues generated by the sport fishing license sales.
Does the feds match that?
The feds have a matching program from the Dingell-Johnson program. At the present time, they're bringing in a little over $1,200,000. I'm sorry. It would be $100,000. We have so many figures running through my mind here now.
So on a 3-to-1 basis,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's right, only if the funds are available, Mr. Swanson. Right now they're bringing in just a little over $1 million to the state, $1,200,000.
Excuse me, how much?
About $1,200,000 coming in from DJ. Which is the maximum that's available to the state. There's a few dollars available from the anadromous fish program, which we're bringing in. And that there has, I think, been running about 180 to 200,000.
Further questions? There are no further questions. Thank you, Mr. Swanson.
How much do we increase the licenses from last year? We've
essentially doubled them. And they went from $5 for the resident to $10. It's now $30 for a non-resident. You included a new license, a one-day license as well, in addition to the 10-day license. That was just on a sport fish side.
Can you tell me how much that increased the amount of flow of dollars from not only the state but the federal government? How much it added to what we already had 2 years ago?
In 1976, the license revenue was just a little over $1 million. So in essence, we've increased that by about 800,000. Like I say, 77 closed out about 1,000,009. It did not increase our revenue from the federal government because we were receiving maximum available prior to that time.
Now, with the increase, you asked for, you asked in your budget, you asked for an increase in personnel in Fort Fishery. And as I recall, it was biologists and studiers and things like that. Maybe you can brief me on, just overall, on what kind of people you put to work in Fort Fishery.
What kind of people?
Well, right. What were those, what was that personnel that, I can't remember, there was 14 or 15, and I think we allowed half of them when we found out that the federal government was gonna even cut back on federal funds. We probably wouldn't even be, in the final result, we probably wouldn't even be able to fund those seven, but I think we gave you the right to spread those people wherever you wanted them. And I don't recall what, I should have sent you a memo and asked you to tell me what group of people you put on, whether they were biologists or they're just gonna study things or what they were gonna do. I've never.
Some of the positions, Mr. Chairman, some of the positions were making even permanent status to positions that we've had to put on to carry on our existing programs. For example, we had converted some time and put on a biologist in the Homer area, which has had tremendous growth, population growth, and a lot of pressure demands placed on it. We've converted some of our temporary time into permanent clerical assistance, for example, in some of our regional offices, our headquarters office. Those took care of two positions. We requested one position to be converted from a federal grant program onto the operating budget, carried on as a full state position. Some of the other elements that you saw on the budget breakout, let's just say that they were personal service items. They were not necessarily new people. We were taking and converting temporary time into permanent part-time to give the staff more flexibility in keeping on people for more than 6 months for jobs that have a longer duration than that but did not require 4 years full-time employment. These positions included a temporary biologist in Delta, some clerical assistants up in that area, a temporary biologist in Fairbanks, plus two temporary, or I should say permanent part-time seasonal people, technician types. There was some increase in man months of aid time that was requested there, both for the Anchorage and Fairbanks area, and some for the southeastern area. And these appeared as line item figures on the request for new positions. It was sort of a mix of the various items there. There were, I believe, a request for five new positions, two of which would have been involved with Southeastern, we might add here. One was involvement with the Mali study down in the Ketchikan area to provide us the base data for that particular area, and then one was support for the land use program that we're presently involved with in the Forest Service.
How much of the $200,000 now to go? Because we didn't fund the total amount of requests you asked for. How much of the $200,000 now would be used for funding those positions that we didn't fund originally in the budget?
I would say none.
None?
This would be a special, as I understand it, a special authorization for Cook Inlet Kingsan, and it would be geared toward those programs.
Well, this will be for biologists and planners and studiers and things like that.
It would be for some temporary assistance to provide the base data, which our present staff would have to analyze. Most of it is the more physical type things. We would have to increase our aerial surveys and try to get a better count of existing stocks of fish in these systems. We'd have to put more people on the ground to try to get better counts of the fish and some of the glacial streams that we can't aerial survey. Very little of the money itself would go toward any type of staffing except on a temporary basis to pick up the extra time that's required to get the data.
I would kind of like to break down on where the $200,000. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Malone?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Some sort of follow-up on that. The legislation as originally introduced was designed to address the sports fisheries in Cook Inlet, principally for freshwater fishery. And that's still the purpose of the appropriation. It's not my intention that the department take the money and
run to Southeast Alaska or Interior or anyplace else with it, because that was, that's where the pressure is right now, the sports fish pressure.
Most things we get, Mr. Speaker, in the interior is promises.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Malone.
Yeah, not making any promises. If you look at page 1, line 12 of the bill, it says Cook Inlet, King Salmon, Sport Fishery. So it's fairly explicit. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions?
Let me ask the Speaker a question. Would you agree with the idea that sports and commercial ought to work, is try to work it out together? Ed, how much money you got in the commercial fishery of King Salmon, Cook Inlet?
Mr. Chairman, there is an allocation, of course, to the Cook Inlet region, Cook Inlet area, two areas now. I'm not sure that it can be identifiable as for King Salmon program. Perhaps I could ask Steve Neuer to review that a little bit further. Steve is the chief fishery scientist for the Commercial Fish Division.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have exact budget figures with me, but I think between research and management, including federal aid, Cook Inlet probably has on the order of $400,000 spent in management and research of that salmon fishery, primarily salmon, and some shellfish in the southern outer district. It's not divided by species, Mr. Hogan. It's done by, you know, we have a total number of programs. And for example, your various surveys and catch statistics and this sort of thing and stock separation work is spread over a season on all species. We actually spent, and are spending at the moment, a rather small amount on king salmon, because there basically is not a viable king salmon commercial fishery in Cook Inlet, and hasn't been for some years.
Well, it's a pretty substantial incidental catch, though, from what information I
have. Basically, it's not even very large from that standpoint. We don't open the commercial fisheries in Cook Inlet at the moment until June 25th. In the central district, on July 1st, in the northern district, when the bulk of the king salmon run, the major Susitna system, and even the Kenai early run is through. There's some incidental harvest later in the season, I think. Lou, correct me if I'm wrong, amounts to maybe 5 or 10,000 fish total in the Gillnet fisheries. We have been cooperating with the Sport Fish Division and working on stock separation analysis of catch statistics for where catch statistics are available. But the Commercial Fisheries Division itself has concentrated on major commercial species, sockeye, binks, and chumsen.
Further questions?
Mr. Rosemary of Information, where's that stock that goes out of the Crooked Creek hatchery there? Where do they plant that? Where does it come back to them?
Mr. Chairman,
that's all king salmon in it this year.
I believe that's coming back to the Crooked Creek area. The releases are at that site.
The Sea Otter.
No, Crooked Creek.
Yeah, that's tributary.
That's where the hatchery is.
It's tributary to the Sea Otter.
That would be part of the late run of Cook Inlet and King Salmon. That would be part of the late run of Cook Inlet and King Salmon.
The late run.
Right.
Well, this is what
as opposed to the early Susitna run.
Further questions? Yeah. No, thank you very much, John. Anyone else like to file this bill?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Swan.
Before we move this bill out, I would like to have ample time to prepare an amendment that crank some money in under the same program for the interior. I'd like to have one day to prepare an amendment to this bill before we move to our committee.
Is there an objection to holding the bill over till tomorrow? Mr. Malone?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any objection to it. I think that the basic policy question the bill raises is whether or not we want to provide general fund support in lieu of fish and game funds. At least the extent that the appropriation provides. And if the legislature does adopt that course of action, then I would guess that the proper way to handle it in the future, if that policy decision is made by this legislature, would be to incorporate the necessary appropriations in the budget request for ensuing fiscal years so that there wouldn't be special legislation on the subject in the future. But one way or another, whether it's through the appropriation, general fund appropriation mechanism, which is what I would recommend to the committee, or whether it's through some sort of increased fees, such as license fees or otherwise, I think that
we have to provide adequate management for the sports fisheries, particularly Cook Inlet, King Salmon, and I think we have to do something about it this year. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Duncan.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if I could ask Mr. Swanson exactly what he has in mind, if he has anything in mind, as far as the amount might be, and did he have any reasonable type of backup when the proposal might come in?
Well, by tomorrow, I could have an amendment prepared that, and some backup of expanded sport fisheries program and recommendation what we do in the interior, because we're pretty much left out other than a token. And if it's good for the Kenai Peninsula, if it's good for southeastern Alaska, then it's good for other parts of Alaska too.
How much is southeast Indian?
Well.
Do you have a figure in mind, Mr. Swanson?
Yes, I do, but I'd like to be able to and the type of people that I would like to see how the money would be spent. I would like to at least have that much of a courtesy of one day. But if anybody has objections, it's all right.
Sorry, I've got you. I've got you. Just move it up.
All right. Go ahead.
The reason I ask if you had a figure in mind, Mr. Swanson, is that you could propose a figure, and if it's a little better down, if your motion or your suggestion holds up, why you could have the time to prepare it. If it didn't, why wouldn't you delay the bill a day with the only time?
No, Mr. Speaker, I don't have a figure off the top of my head, what it would cost to extend a program like this, surveillance type of program, and for the interior. Probably wouldn't take me over one day.
All right. Is there an objection from the committee to holding the bill over one day?
Okay.
Discussion? All those in favor of holding the bill over one day, signify by raising your right hand. 1, 2, 3. Those opposed? Somebody's not voting.
What was the question?
All of those in favor of holding the bill over until tomorrow, raise your right hand. 1, 2, 3, 4. Those opposed? 1, 2, 3. Well, we'll take it up tomorrow. Okay, we're going to change the order here just a little. Mr. Gardner here is to testify on the bill, and he wanted to talk about testify on House Bill 573-898 and 763. We'll start with 573, Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, in your bill file on House Bill 573, there should be a packet, which is a cover memo on it, from myself to Chairman Cooper. And the House Bill 573 deals with various amendments to the Fisherman's Loan Act. And the Resources Committee put together several bills and provisions they had in several different bills, all into one vehicle, House Bill 573. And I have proposed some amendments to their version of the bill. And the amendments that I proposed were additions to the work they did. I didn't change anything they did. I just made some additional amendments to the Fisherman's Loan Fund. And in the packet information, you'll find a sectional analysis of the proposed committee substitute that I've prepared. And it's probably easier to look at the sectional analysis to understand what the bill is than it is to look at the bill at first, because it makes a lot of amendments to existing law. So maybe I'll kind of briefly run through the sectional analysis so you can see what all the proposals are. Section 1 of the bill makes some just technical amendments to the existing law to clarify what was the original intent of the legislature as to who could qualify for Fisherman's Loan. Basically, that you had to be a resident state for 5 years, and that you had to be a fisherman for any three of the last 5 years, and this didn't mean you owned a boat, but as a crew member or participating in any fishery. And this is just a clarification of something that came up before. Section 2 expands the eligibility to fishermen who are in a business arrangements that are besides just as an individual, either in partnerships or corporations or joint ventures. And I think this is important because as we get into larger and larger fishing ventures, fishermen are becoming like any other businessman. There's a lot of taxation and liability reasons why they would organize in some kind of corporate form rather than just being an individual fisherman such as I am. I'm not a partnership or any such arrangement, but you'd still have to be a commercial fisherman.
Mr.
Chair, this is it's just changing the legal. In fact, nothing really changed except for the legal construct that the person looks at.
Right, it'd still have to be, the boat was 100% owned, or the business was 100% owned by a commercial fisherman, but a corporation. You know, if I incorporated, for instance, or myself and another fisherman incorporated.
In order to accrue the benefits of a corporation or limited liability or whatever.
All right. Section 3 is really, I think, probably the biggest section of the bill, and this basically expands the fisherman's loan fund in terms of its loan bill, and I think this is the real area that is needed in terms of financing any bottom fish development, and for that matter, any of the shell fisheries, and just recognizing that the cost of boats are going up, and that the limitation we originally had a few years ago of $100,000 doesn't apply to a lot of the fisheries that we want to promote. This raises the limit to $500,000. The rest of the terms that appear in there, so the terms of loan are the existing law. And it also makes some additional changes beyond that. It allows for a commercial, more than one commercial fisherman to go together and basically pool their loans. So if you had two or three or four fishermen, they could go together and buy a more expensive boat, $1 million boat, say, for two fishermen or three fishermen, but they each would individually have to qualify. And looking what's gone on in other countries that have developed the bottom fishery, you're talking about boats that get up anywhere easily in $500,000, $1 million range. Some of them, 150-foot boat is going to be around $4 million, and there just aren't too many fishermen who individually go out and buy $2 million or $4 million boats. And the reality of it is you're going to have several fishermen maybe joint venturing to go out. And that if each of they can individually qualify, they could, under the terms of this bill, they could pool their loans, in effect. It also allows the state to take a second mortgage position if the state's share of the loan is only 35% of the total purchase price of the vessel. And this could only go up to $1 million. The idea here was to allow the state basically to help promote the financing of these more expensive vessels, but require some other participation, either federal or private bank financing. And I think this is just a way of stretching the state's dollars more. The reason we limited it to 35% was the fact that the state should not be in a position of having a second mortgage if we're taking a substantial amount of the risk. Obviously, under this, you'd have some situation where, say, a bank put up 50%, the individual getting the loan had, say, 15% equity, and the state took 35%, the bank would have the first mortgage. But it would save the state money because, in terms of processing the loan, basically, because the bank is going to have to do, since they're the primary lender, do all the work in terms of finding out whether this is a good investment for the bank to make, and then the state can be in a position to participate in a secondary role. Now, there is a provision in the back of the bill on page 8, line 13, that gives the Department of Commerce the ability to establish a special reserve account to cover these second mortgages. There has been the argument made the state shouldn't be in a position of making, having a second position in terms of security, but this loan fund would be discretionary and allow the department to establish a special reserve account to protect themselves in terms of bad loans, basically that they could charge a higher interest rate if they felt it was necessary. But it is discretionary.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Gay.
Does it, Terry, does that mean that the corporation or the partnership can put in a request for an additional loan under the language? That would exceed $500,000. You know, like if you borrowed $500,000, then they can come back again and ask for.
No, because they would exceed the 35% thing. The only way that they could go up to $1 million is if the state only had 35% of the total purchase price. So this wouldn't allow them to get one loan and then come back and get another loan. Okay, that's kind of that's the substantive provisions of the bill, really, that change the existing loan program in Section 3. Now, Section 4 was a bill actually introduced by the administration, and this expands a provision in the Fisherman's Loan Program that allows the Fisherman's Loan Program to make loans for limited entry permits. That authority now exists, but the problem had been, according to the limited entry law, the state could not have a lien on the limited entry permit. So you had to come up with some other collateral besides the permit. So in other words, somebody was buying a permit, but they couldn't use it for collateral. So this Section 4 basically sets up a process, and I think that probably the administration officials could go into it in more detail than I can, but where the state, and only the state, would be able to put a lien basically on the permit, and then provides for a default procedure if the person was to default on his loan on the permit and for the reissuance of the permit. And that's basically the bill. And it's one additional thing that I would suggest to the committee if they see fit to pass this bill out, and that is that in the committee's possession is Senate Bill 184, which is a Senate bill that deals with the same subjects of amendments to the Commercial Fishermen's Loan Act. And I think it would expedite the passage of the bill that the committee was going to act favorably on House Bill 573, that it be placed under the title of Senate Bill 184, which was referred back from the House Rules Committee last week to this committee. And it's on the same subject, although it does not contain all of these amendments. It contained other amendments that the Senate had passed to the Fisherman's Loan Fund.
Mr. Gardner, am I correct that your remarks were addressed to committee substitute for House Bill 573?
Right.
And it was your suggestion that if the effect passed without, it was to incorporate this language into Senate Bill 184.
That's correct.
Okay, any questions from the committee? If not, thank you very much, Mr. Duncan. Mr. Meekin.
Terry, about the amending it onto the Senate bill, is that, that's a Senate bill that,
the only thing the Senate bill, it passed the Senate and went through the House, and went through the House Finance Committee last year, and went to the House Rules Committee. And the only thing it provided, it was going to raise the limit to, I think, $150,000 from $100,000 to $150,000. So it was only that amendment to the Commercial Fisherman's Loan Act. And obviously this contains.
Is there any parallel bill in the Senate or anything? I mean, are they going to?
I'm not sure. I think there may, there are some other bills in, but this bill, 573, was really, you know, combined all of the various amendments that the House Resources had under one vehicle. I think there are amendments, but they're in separate bills scattered around.
Well, I guess what I'm getting at is that...
The sponsor of the bill, Senator Tolan, and I've talked to her about this, and she is, doesn't have any objection to it.
I was thinking maybe we should send Step 573 out also, given the difficulty sometimes of figuring out what the Senate's going to do.
Further questions with me? Not thank you, Mr. Gardner. Is anyone else here wish to testify on this bill?
Which one is that? 573.
Is anyone from the administration here wish to testify on this particular bill? It's not.
Code license.
Oh, excuse me. Would you take a seat and state your name, please?
I'm Pete James, Director of the Division of Business Law. We spent a considerable amount of time working with Resources Committee on this revised bill, but in Resources, we took out the section on seconds, and I see it's back in. The one section is Section 3 that included second mortgages, and we oppose taking seconds. And it's been our experience with the fishing loan programs that the maximum that will loan is 75% of the cost or the appraised value at this time. And we've been very fortunate to have recovered on foreclosures to where we're in a first position and loaning 75%. And we've had several cases where there's been banks or other people that have been in a second position. And on every one that we foreclosed on, they've lost everything they had in it. And so I would still object to taking seconds on this.
Would you give me the page?
Page 8, line 13.
I don't have that page in the bill that I've got. I think this is in the last one.
Page 8, line 13. Special account.
So that would be on page 3, section C.
This is coming off, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me, are you speaking to...
Let's be at ease here just a second. I'm having problems.
Line 13, section C, where it starts with commercial fishing.
Are you on the committee substitute?
I'm on the finance committee substitute.
I don't have that bill.
It's I think we've got the same goal.
Which one is it?
Are we working? We're working off of the one that says work draft paper, committee substitute for House Bill number 573, finance. Are we all talking about the same thing now?
Okay.
Then we go from there, we go to Page three, line 13C.
Right.
And what you're objecting to is the second priority lien, is that what?
Yes, it is. It would be the entire section, so.
Entire section. Okay. You object to that one, and then you objected to on page 8? Did I understand you right on page 8? You objected to, again, page 8, line 13?
Yes, it would be line 13, that entire section. But by disallowing the sections, we wouldn't need that. And we already have a reserve account within the fund anyway.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Deacon?
Well, if you did have a reserve account, what would be the harm in having taken second mortgages?
It depends on how large the reserve account we want. We have a reserve account now just to cover any losses to occur.
Well, I know, but I mean, like, you know, you said that when you foreclosed, you've been in the first position, people that have second mortgages have lost, you know, have had to take it on. But currently you don't take any second mortgages. Okay, so, but you're saying that it's your feeling that that you might take some debt loan.
I think we would be getting into extremely high rates for concessions.
Why is it? I mean, how does that work out? I don't have real knowledge of that.
Well, right now, we will loan 75% of the cost of the bus. And most of the loans, if you're going to have trouble with them, they're going to let the boats run down. They're not going to care what kind of shape they're in. If they miss a payment, they know you're coming out. So chances are the boat's not going to be worth what you've loaned against it, but when you go to foreclose, even in the first position, it will depreciate or deteriorate that much.
I mean, you'd only have 35%, right, in a second mortgage.
That would be 35% of what was an addition to a first on it, though. See, someone else would still be in that first. So you'd be talking about a percentage of the 25% is what we're talking about.
Well, is that your 75% limit still wouldn't be in there? I mean,
but what you would be talking about, instead of us loaning 75%, would bring the percentage probably up to about 85%, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
We would be able to loan instead of 75%, it would be about 85%.
Yeah. Between the first and second mortgage holders, there'd be a loan would be available.
Yeah, the bank would not take a second. It would be us, it would be the state that would have to give a second. Where if a person went to...
In other words, the bank might loan 50 and you'd loan 35 and the total guy would have bought 85% of the value. But you'd be in the second position without what you're saying.
That's what it would amount to. If we take a $100,000 figure, the bank would loan $75,000 and we could come in on a second, there would be $25,000 difference there. We could loan 35% of that $25,000.
Well, the only added risk would be the 10% the difference between the 75 and the 85, right? I mean, if we had a provision in this bill that said no matter whether you're in second position or first or whatever, the total amount loan between the two lenders can't exceed 75% or the state can't participate in it, okay? If you had that, then your exposure to risk wouldn't be any greater than if you just went ahead and loaned 75%, right?
Right.
So what you're saying is that it's the... it brings a percentage up, and then the value of the repossessed boat might not cover both lenders, and therefore this person in second would lose something.
Mr. Gardner?
Yeah, one thing I might point out on page 3, line 24, subsection 4, in this special account, if you look there on page 3, line 24, since the state is taking the second position, it allows the state to charge a higher interest rate, and this extra interest rate would go into the special account to be a reserve against any potential losses. Now, of course, this would be discretionary. As I said, the department, if it felt it was making good loans, didn't need this reserve. So I think Mr. Jeans could potentially be right that by taking a second mortgage, you're in a higher risk position. but the way you take care of it is by a special, you know, by a reserve account against any losses. And then, of course, it's up to the person asking for the loan if he's willing to bear that extra interest cost. But and the other suggestion about maybe just making sure that the total loan could not exceed 75%, that probably, I don't have any objection to that, if that's a way to resolve the problem.
Mr. Swanson?
Yeah. In the mortgages or in the life of a mortgage to a boat, what is the, for how long a period? 5 years, 10 years?
Our average is about 12 years.
An average of about 12 years. And then the life expectancy of a boat is 12 years, then is that what you base it on?
I'd say it's probably a little longer than that. Probably about 15, 16 years.
Full value.
That's what we're doing.
Then if the second mortgage is for a term not longer than 15 years, you'd be beyond actually the 15 years if you carried a second mortgage. Then that second mortgage is for 15 years, you'd be way into an area or a time of where the boat would not be anywhere near it.
Okay, I think the reason they use 15 years on this is in the statute as it exists now, we have a maximum term of 15 years, but we also have a provision that allows us to extend loans for bad seasons, so we never make a loan for 15 years so that we can't extend it.
Okay, then if you have a loan that's 75% or $75,000 on a $100,000 boat, and it, when it becomes, when they come and apply for a second mortgage, then the actually, not only the first mortgage, but the second mortgage, which is high risk. The first mortgage is an indication that the first mortgage, the high risk mortgage, is no longer solid mortgage, or I mean a good mortgage. And when the application comes in, that
if
they want the second mortgage, they're shaky already.
If we're going into that 25% equity, I think it makes a very high risk loan. If we're going to say that the first and the second cannot exceed 75% of the cost, I wouldn't object to that, as long as the two liens would not be over 75% of the cost. And I think it would be very seldom we would have someone come in for us to a second when we could loan 75% of the first, because we couldn't get those interest rates anywhere else.
Mr. Meekin.
Yeah, that's what I was going to question. I mean, why would anybody need you?
The only way they would, if they were going to get a boat that was going to be, say, maybe an old boat, and they were going to the bank.
And the bank had a dollar.
The bank, right. And so would we, to where the combination of the two that maybe would have loaned, $750,000, and they get $500,000 from us and $250,000 from the bank.
And the bank wouldn't cooperate unless they got a first, and so you'd have to take, even though he maybe approached you first, you'd have to take a second.
Well, I think. Again, I think we're getting back to almost, if we're going to say that 75% is the total that can be loaned, to eliminate the position of a first and a second, we should go to a participation loan, exactly like we have in tourism, and just require bank participation over a certain amount, and not go over 75%, and we have the same thing again, where we share the first.
I had paid off a portion. You had a question here. You have on line, on page two, line eight, may not exceed $500,000. Why did you use the figure of $750,000? Because the first and second mortgage, according to Bill, would be in excess of 75%.
Okay, we're talking about $500,000 for the state portion.
Right.
The state loan. So if we had the state go for $500,000 and our bank wanted to go for $250,000, we could share it on first and loan.
No, I'm adding not the bank now. I'm adding the second mortgage now of
the state
35% of the balance. It would exceed the limit of the 500.
We couldn't go over the limit.
Okay.
We would go up to the maximum.
I wonder why he used that figure.
Yeah.
I think we've got a lot of problems with a lot of fishery anyway.
That was the only question. That's the only comments that I have, unless someone has some questions on the
questions from
the recommendation.
Mr. Meekin?
Yeah, you're not currently allowed to participate in the first bank.
We can do that now. That is another reason that I would object to the seconds.
Oh, I see. I thought you were saying that that we should put that in as, no, ways of this.
Well, you can do that now.
Yes, if we have a bank that wants to participate with us on a fishing loan, we can, right now, our limit is $150,000.
And we have several of the boats out of Kodiak that are $300,000 or $400,000, for where it's been a joint loan between us and the bank. And we share the first.
Does that in itself satisfy all the demand, all the need out there? I mean, is there some guy that might be helped if you could take seconds and won't be helped with the participation?
I think there would probably be some people that could be helped, but we're getting into an extremely high-risk area, I believe, when we start doing that. Because now we're requiring that they come up with the 25% equity position. And most of the time when a guy's getting into a boat that is a $400,000 to $500,000 vessel, he's already fishing a boat that is probably worth $100,000. And he can sell that boat to come up with his equity position, and we could loan him the rest. But if we get ourselves in a position to where an individual could come in and get a vessel that was going to cost $500,000, and he could get a first from us, and it was some way he could come in and get a second, I think we're really getting into an extremely high-risk area if they could borrow all the money.
One more question, Mr. Chairman. But you wouldn't maintain your objection if we did put the limit down to 75%, even as a second?
No, I wouldn't, because I don't think we'd have to take a second with it 75%.
Well, there might be a situation.
It could be possible.
It might be rare, but like you said, the million dollar loan, the bank wouldn't participate unless they got a first.
And that's right. It would be. I wouldn't object.
But you wouldn't object.
Yes, I don't think that the section C should be out of the deal. But even at that, when the commercial fishing loan for construction of a new vessel, fishing vessel, or the purchase of an existing fishing vessel, I think that I would feel better if we had, if we came down to take a mortgage on a new vessel, but to take a second mortgage on a fishing vessel that's could be any age, I think that would be an extremely higher risk than the first portion of this bill, and I would object to that type of language, or the purchase of an existing fishing vessel may be secured by second priority lien. But it's to second mortgage an old boat would be extremely high risk. Would you be more comfortable with the section out of the bill completely?
Yes, I would.
Further questions on Mr. Dean? No, thank you very much. Anyone else wish to testify on the bill? Mr. Osterbeck?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Osterbeck, we've been considering work draft paper committee, finance committee substitute. Is that the one you have before you?
Yes.
So we're talking about the same one, okay, proceed.
Yeah, my name is Alvin Osterbeck. I'm assuming nouns. Yeah. When I drafted up the bill, the first one here, we got a few minor changes in it. It's not just for, you know, not just bottom fish we're talking about in this bill or the big boats. It's something where you need about $500,000 now to buy a 50-foot boat. And I think Peter Jean can tell you that. The prices went up, and all you can buy with $150,000 is about a 42-foot boat. And there's a lot of people making real good money with the 58-foot boats, which is just at a limit saner. Neil Pack, 50,000 pound of king crab. And there's a lot of people who'd like to get into it. What are fishing now? And myself, I believe the 50-foot boat is a better boat for all-around people. You get a 120-foot boat, you got four or five people on it. Cost you a couple million dollars. You get something, four boats with four people on or five, and you're given more chances to fish. and I believe this bill would be a real good thing for the fishermen of the state of Alaska, not just looking at bottom fish, but looking at all species, and it's big enough to fish bottom fish if you get into that. We have boats up there now, it's 50 feet long, 58 feet, was dragging for shrimp year-round out of Sand Point, Kodiak. And I think it's a real good bill, and I think that we need that $500,000 up there. And about the second mortgage and everything, I think if a guy had money and could get a, you know, $500,000 loan, and if he got a couple hundred thousand, he could always pick up some more from the bank if you came out with it, and they would take second mortgage. Right now, they wouldn't take second mortgage if you come up with $150,000. And you're asking a bank for $750,000, they're going to tell you no way, you know. But if you're coming up with the biggest part of the money, they will take the second mortgage, providing you've got people what can back you and say you're a good fisherman and come down. They would loan you the money. But right now, when you're going to ask for $750,000, say, well, I got a $150,000 loan from the state, and you take second mortgage, they won't do it.
Questions from the committee?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Al, you said that in your remarks, you said you made real good, the fishermen are making real good money now.
The ones that have the 50-foot boats, yes.
Okay, you said you're making good money on a 58-foot boat. And the limit on this one is even kicking the limit up to 500,000.
That's about what they cost right now. Okay. At the steel boat.
If they're making real good money, what's the objective of where? Why would we have to go to a second mortgage if they're making good money, a private enterprise, or justify the loan from the state? Why would they have to go to a second mortgage if there's that much money to be made out there in fishery?
They wouldn't have to go for a 50-foot boat to a second mortgage.
Okay.
This would buy the boat out completely, but we're talking about if you want to get into a bigger boat. But I think it has to be another bill, which we have here.
We're dealing, may I continue? We're dealing mostly then with existing. We're not dealing with bottom fish yet.
No, I think not in this bill.
As I wander through the fishing fleets now, I'm getting a real rumble on bottom fish.
Right.
We should deal strictly with what we have today.
Okay. On this bill, yes, the 500,000 could come true, and this is what Peter Jean and I talked about. He has no, you know, nothing against the bill. By raising that, where we could get up to a 50-foot boat, which would be 58 feet overall. And I believe if we're going to get in the bottom fish, we have to have a different kind of a bill. And we also have that bill, right?
Pete indicated the bank. If it was a good boat and a good prospect, the bank would go equally on the first mortgage of up to $500,000. But then, I think my questions lead to, do you think it's even necessary to actually, when you take second mortgages, you're jeopardizing the loan in one sense of the word, because if you get half a dozen bad ones, then you got a problem. Then it makes it harder for the good fishermen to get a loan. So when you throw yourself with a second mortgage into a high risk area, being that you're a fisherman, do you think that this is necessary in here?
Mr. Chairman,
I'd like to have Al finish that. Then. Fine.
You're talking about the Section C?
Yeah.
What do you think about it, Terry? Is there any problem for Dave backing out?
I could ask Pete to respond to that.
Mr. Jean. Okay, I think one thing that brought this thing up on the seconds was in this last year we've had probably 10 or 12 applications come in from Chignook, Sand Point area, and these guys are buying boats $300,000 and $400,000. Almost all of them have over $100,000 cash in the bank to put into these boats. With our limits at $150,000, that would give them $250,000. We required a first, a bank wouldn't take a second. And with our limit at $150,000, we have more or less cut out this group. If we raise the limit to $500,000, I think it's going to solve the problem that they're trying to it around on the seconds.
You through, Mr. Swanson?
Yes.
Mr. Meek?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any questions, Mr. Osbeck.
Further questions, Mr. Osbeck? Mr. Rhodes?
Matter of information now. Do you think of building a $500,000 boat or up to $1 million, we're talking about a bottom fishery, do you think it's a viable project, with fishes 5 cents a pound?
No. Not at 5 cents a pound. But on this particular bill, you know, the $500,000, I think Peter Jean explained it pretty truly, that you can't buy the boat which you really need now for $150,000. And if you could get a $500,000 loan, you could get a small boat. And getting into the bottom fishing, the bigger boats, we'll have to do something else on that. This bill wouldn't take care of it, regardless how you look at it. But it would sure help the people up there now, where they can get the loan and buy a boat, what they could make a good living. That's talking about up around my district and Lake Chicken, you know, a lot of them in Kodiak got the 58-foot boat. But getting into bottom fish, I don't think this bill is for bottom fish. It's just for the regular fishermen that's fishing out there now, salmon and crab and shrimp.
Further questions, Mr. Osbeck? No, thank you very much.
I think.
Anyone else wish to ask questions? Not, Mr. Meek.
Mr. Chairman, I got a suggestion that, for amendment out there. And it's in regard to Section C, Mr. Jean's, and I think, you know, there is some problem there, but if we limit it to 75%, there wouldn't be any more exposure to risk at all than there is currently. That might be the way that would work out. It wouldn't put him in any compromising position at all, and he has no objection to that. And so I'd like to add the following language. On line 17, after institution, delete the...
What page?
Page three, excuse me. Delete the period, and add, if the total financing does not exceed 75% of the appraised value of the collateral used to secure the loan.
Everyone understand that? Mr. Jeans, do you find objection to that language?
That would be fine. Well, Chairman, that language can be just trimmed down that the loan shall not exceed 75%, period.
All right.
That would be fine.
On the discussion?
Under discussion, Mr. Swanson?
On the discussion, I think that would help the bill, but I would like to see that, as long as we're going to have second mortgages, I would like to see that second mortgages on new boats, not on old ones. Because this language in here, the purchase of an existing fishing vessel could be any kind of a fishing vessel, one that you could stick your knife right through the planks on it.
You get a marine survey when you hold money on
board.
Always.
Always.
A bank does. I don't know about
the state.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be a lot more comfortable with the bill. As long as we're going to own that kind of money and put the state's dollars out there at risk, I don't think there's any reason to risk it any more than we have to. And I think by elimination of that language would certainly be compatible, because if we're going to loan that kind of money, less my God, let's loan it on a new boat, not an old one.
Mr. Meekins?
Chairman, was that a question, Ms. Swanson? Was that an amendment to the bill?
Back up. Was your suggestion in the form of a motion, or was that just for?
Well, I'd amend the motion to amendment.
Mr. Swanson, let me find out if Mr. Meekins is making a motion. That's not coming enough.
I thought I moved.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I moved my amendment.
All right.
Not to exceed the loan. Not to exceed the total amount of $75,000, is that right?
75% of the appraised value of the collateral.
And I would amend the...
Is there... All right.
I will amend the amendment to exclude the language from line 14 where it says, for purchase of an existing fishing vessel. Down to line 17 at the end of the period.
Discussion on the amendment to the amendment,
yes,
Mr. Meekins.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's two separate questions. think we should go to mine first and then go on that. They separate very easily, and they're not necessarily tied together. I mean, we should still do the 75% whether or not Mr. Swanson's motion carries, so I'd like to vote on that first.
You object to that in question, Mr. Swanson?
Yeah, because they're both in section C. Well, I'm not going to stop it, but parliamentary, I just suggested you do whatever you want, Mr. Chairman.
I'm trying to find out what Mr. Swanson wants to do.
I move the amendment.
To the amendment?
Right.
And there was objection?
Yeah, I object.
All right. Discussion? Mr. Meekins and Mr. Rose.
Mr. Chairman, some votes are old, but they're better than new ones.
Just like some people. Mr. Rose?
Well, I object to it from the standpoint that fellow has a boat built, this brand new boat, and he fishes it 2 years or so. And immediately knows that he can make more money, or at least he has a desire to have a larger boat. So this boat is still in good shape. I mean, it's a secondhand boat, but it's proven probably a successful boat. It's probably geared, and some guy wants it, but he can't borrow any money on it because it's a secondhand boat. And I think you're just restricting the program by looking at it. Because there is a lot of secondhand boats or good boats.
We're only talking about a second mortgage.
Well,
we're not talking about the first.
Further discussion on the amendment to the amendment, Mr. Swanson. All those in favor of the amendment to the amendment signify by raising your right hand. Those opposed? Amendment to the amendment failed. Are you ready for the question on the main motion? Amendment. All those in favor signify by raising your right hand. Opposed? Amendments adopted. Further amendments? Further discussion? Mr. Meekin.
Mr. Chairman, if there is no further discussion, I move we...
Mr. Meekins, before you make that, would you take into consideration the suggestion by Mr. Gardner that we substitute this language? Okay. Nobody forgot this.
Mr. Chairman, if SB 184 is before us, I'm not aware that it is, but if it is, I'd like to amend this on it.
Perhaps we better find that out by quick.
Yeah, it's in the file.
Senate Bill 184 here.
It's in the file. Well, yeah, it was moved back to finance from rules, so I guess it is.
Yeah, it's in the file.
It's the same thing.
Where's
184?
Yeah, let's look
and see right quick. You don't want to be adding something.
Mr. Chairman, the motion would be amend Senate Bill 184 by adding to it the amended version of the Finance Committee substitute for 573, Fair Committee substitute to 184. When it comes to those two bills.
Would you be at ease just a minute? Did somebody determine whether or not we're sure this bill is before?
It isn't in my file.
Huh?
It isn't in my file.
It's in mine.
All right. We're legal. It's here. Hey, where'd everybody go?
Lost your car. According to this, it's not true. I just said, well,
it was referred back to us.
Your status is bolded.
Well, they're just checking the machine. Oh, they're double checking.
March 31st.
Well, Oral has the pink one there, the committee status.
So,
yeah, according to this, it was just referred back on
Bill's
Friday.
No.
It's on the board.
House Senate Bill 184. It was referred to Finance Committee.
Well, we're just reading the movie machine in there.
Is this the governor's bill?
Not bad.
Finally got somebody. Let's get it out of here before we lose it.
Okay.
I believe it. Now, would you redo it, Mr. Meekins?
Mr. Chairman, I move to prepare a committee substitute to Senate Bill 184, adding to 184 the contents of the Finance Committee substitute as amended to HB 573.
Is there objection to the motion? Hearing none, it's so ordered.
And I move it out.
I thought that was part of the motion.
It was an inferred part of the motion.
All right.
Chairman, members of the committee, this seems like there's a lot of bills on fisheries. That's because it's really that way, because that's actually, Mr. Osterbach and the Speaker and I talked to Chairman Cooper, and we suggested that we should have all the fisheries bills up at once so that the Finance Committee could look at them all at once instead of dragging it out. So that's why it seems like there's a lot of fisheries bills, because there are. House Bill 898 is an appropriation bill for $100,000 to the through the Department of Commerce to the Alaska Fisheries Development Corporation. And I just handed you out a packet of information that explains what the $100,000 is. Basically, the Alaska Fisheries Development Corporation was it's a group that was organized of industry, just processors and fishermen. It's a private nonprofit organization. Was organized to receive federal funding for the promotion of the bottom fishery. They have presently applied for $3.5 million of federal Salt and Stahl Kennedy funds, which they're in the process of trying to get. What the $100,000 is basically kind of state seed money, so to put it. And the $100,000 would allow them to hire an executive director and set up an office so that they are in a position to manage the $3.5 million of federal funds that they've applied for over the next 2 years. In addition, I think it shows the state's support to this project. We're basically competing against all the other coastal states for some these funds, and there's Alaska, if we were to get this amount of money, would be getting the lion's share of the money. And we have a very good proposal, and we've gotten fairly good support from some of the federal agencies, although they obviously have powerful senators and congressmen from other states, more powerful than we have. So I think that by the state appropriating $100,000, which isn't that much compared to the potential of the $3.5 million of federal funds, plus what the industry will be contributing, which is shown on the following backup sheets. it would help encourage the federal government to give this money to the Alaska Fisheries Development Corporation. One thing that the federal government expressed concern about, and I think is true, is that they are going to grant this money to an organization which really doesn't even have an office. You know, it's a group of industry and fishermen people that have come together and drawn up these proposals on a committee basis, everybody paying their own way to meetings and such. And so they're going to then take part of their federal grant money to get organized and then start managing all of these different proposals in each area of the state. And the $100,000 would kind of help get the egg before the chicken, I think. It would allow them to get set up so that they are in a position to manage these funds when they are granted to them, which should be in the next few months. And I think this will ensure a greater possibility of success, so they're in a position to then get the second year's funding. And there's also the question that the federal fiscal year starts in October, so they're going to have to receive this money this summer and have some performance so that by October 1st they're in a position to say, look, we've done something with the money you gave us, now we're ready for phase two. So I think this grant will help them do that. I'd be happy to answer any other questions about the proposal.
Any questions from what's left of the committee?
Well, this isn't any worse for counting the whales.
Are these guys coming back?
Lawyer, well, she's a lawyer on this deal.
We'll go ask Mary to see if she can find me a couple more bodies.
Want a date or what?
Yeah, I got trouble enough with them all.
You had a, Mr. Burton, you had an interest in when I should ask did anybody else want to testify on this? Mr. Gardner, you had, if not, Mr. Gardner, you had some interest in House Bill 763, I believe.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would like to testify on that, although I'm going to be unable to right now because my committee is starting. I've got to move a bunch of bills out. You know how it is. But I'd like to be able to testify either later on today or tomorrow morning if you'll be continuing on the bill.
We'll be back tomorrow morning.
Okay,
that
I would like this fine. I think the chief sponsor is here, though.
All right.
I think you'll have a forum. I'll be gone tomorrow morning.
Mr. Osterbeck, did you wish to testify on 763?
Do we have a copy of that?
This bill number 763 is kind of complicated, but this would be where we could get the loans for the bottom fish, and it's not something what they're going to hand out. You'll have to come up with something like 35% or 40% front end money, so you're not going to go and get a lot of money, and unless you've got something to put in, but it would be for bigger loans. The banker's been up and testified on, they don't see any problem with it. And it's been going through the lower 48s with the farmers. And it's been a success. They haven't ever lost any money on it. And a lot of times, you know, when you stop them from harvesting, they pay them so much. Well, here we get the loan, we're going to try to harvest fish with the loan. It wouldn't just give a loan to buy a boat, but it would give a loan to a corporation to start a fish plant, whichever you want to look at, bottom fish, or we're putting more salmon hatcheries in, and the biggest, one of the problems, not the only, like in Volusia Chain, we only got one cannery, small one in Falls Pass, and if we get more fish up there, we're going to need more processing plants. Right now, they gave the option, I guess, to the Japanese to come and take the excess amount of salmon up in my district. And I think it should go to the Alaska people, not the poor fruit and salmon. But like they say, they don't have any other way to go about it. Well, this bill will give somebody a chance to put up a fresh salmon market or fly it to Europe, get the facilities to have it. Maybe John Williams could explain a little more on it. This bill was drafted up in the interim committee, and it's kind of a complicated one if you haven't followed it up.
Questions from the committee? No, thank you. You give your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Williams. I'm a research analyst with the Research Division of Legislative Affairs. Testifying to the request of Mr. Ostbeck. I apologize for not being prepared. I didn't know this bill was going to be up today. Do you want me to go through a discussion of sections of the bill or something like
that? It might be easier if you do it that way, just walk us through section by section. And I would assume that you're talking about the committee substitute or the original.
I can address my remarks to the committee substitute, I think.
I can help, John.
Generally, the bill is a limited development bank in that it's fashioned after the federal farm credit system, which, like this bill, was initially financed by an appropriation from the federal government. And that appropriation was eventually paid off, or paid back to the federal government, from equity investments of members and from earnings of the federal farm credit system. This bill does basically that same thing. It says that the state shall purchase 60 to 80% of the preferred stock in a fisheries and agriculture cooperative bank. And like the farm credit system, participants in the bank would be required to hold an equity position. For example, if you were a fisherman or farmer and wanted to borrow $100,000 from the bank, they would loan you $110,000, and the $10,000 in extra would be your equity position in the bank. The bill in section one describes the findings, which discuss the various needs of the fishing and agriculture section. The purpose is basically to provide another financial source for these two primary resource sectors. The justification for that is obviously that they're not being sufficiently handled by the present financial systems, or that the demand exceeds the capital supply of the present financial system. I don't think that's the case. I think probably the first case is true, though. Section 3 actually creates the Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Cooperative Development Bank, sets out the selection of the board of directors, and says that the board shall draft the articles of incorporation and the bylaws. Describes various other details with respect to membership meetings and membership stock. The bank has pretty much unlimited authority with respect to financing itself. It may issue bonds, may borrow money from either the private or public sector, and it may offer any covenants or caveats on its bond issues, either revenue or GO bonds. And the section also describes these bonds as legal investments for fiduciaries. The pledge of the state is not given with respect to bond issuances of the bank. If I can...
Oh, I see. I'm sorry, I want to be behind you. I'm trying to find where that was. Pledge of the state is on page 7, I guess.
Right, correct.
That works. Suggested that the credit for the state's not paying those bonds?
Yes.
On page 7, section 41, 45.
I think that's correct, yes.
I was trying to find it. Maybe this is not easy.
It's sort of by omission.
By omission instead of, it doesn't specifically state that?
No, the state just pledges to not change the working agreements under which the bank operates during its lifetime. The pledge of the state is not given for indebtedness of the bank.
Is that usual just to admit it instead of stating that?
I'm not sure.
Because I know in other cases where we had authorities which issue revenue bonds, et cetera.